Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Sandy Nathan. She is the author of a wonderful story, Keiko, the Little Horse That Could. It's a true story of a premature colt that was born on her ranch and its journey that follows. So stay tuned because we're going to get versed in horses, our connections to them, and there's just so much more. I'm really excited about this interview because I'm about to learn something too. So stay tuned. But first of all, just a little bit about Sandy. Sandy Nathan is an award-winning author. Her four books have won 12 national awards. People may be aware of her writing, but probably don't know that she's been involved with horses most of her life. She was a drill team, parade unit, and she also has shown many types of Western horses. She and her family raised and showed Peruvian Paso horses on the ranch Becela for 20 years. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Irene.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you about it. I'm just really interested in horses. You know, as I was reading your bio here, I'm thinking, reflecting back as a child, I remember having these two huge, huge workhorses, and I was just so afraid of them because as a little 4 and 5 year old, to me, they were massive.
Mm-hmm, definitely they were.
Yes. And so this is my vision of horses. And since then, I haven't really, you know, had much to do with horses. So I'm really excited to talk to you because we're going to learn about horses today.
Yeah, well, you're going to learn about horses and people and me.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something. Horses from the absolute very... I have loved horses since I was born, I think, since I knew what a horse possibly was. I have always been afraid of them, including when I was showing them, including when I was showing in the cow palace, including now. I always am. I'm not afraid of the horse. It's like afraid of injury or something like that.
Yeah.
So you're not alone. They are really big. And they have very large feet, and, you know, they can step on you, and there's all sorts of things that can happen. So, you know, so fear is, I think, the common denominator with horse people. Not all people are as timid as I am. Okay, you're talking to the timid end.
Right. Well, you know, I remember the eyes, the big, big, huge, beady eyes.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, also, horses I used in therapy.
Yes.
So it's like, it's almost the opposite.
Yeah. They have an incredible quality, which is probably what got me past all of my fear. There's just a beingness about them. I mean, they're almost like a, not a teddy bear. It's like they almost know, you know. I mean, when I was a kid, when I finally got a horse, it was like the triumph of my life. And I went through all the whole adolescent stuff, you know. And I would go out and I would just put my arms around my horse and cry. And he would just stand there, and I really felt like he knew, you know. He certainly offered me comfort. So, yeah, there is something about them that's absolutely magical. And then riding them is another thing that's, you know, I mean, I have a friend who's an equine therapist. She's a, does equine-assisted therapy. She's a clinical psychologist. And there's that whole end of it. But then there's just riding them. And I can remember riding years ago through the forest up in Woodside and thinking, what is it that's so special about riding a horse? You know, what makes this so special? And I decided it's the motion of the horse. It's like they're very physical, you know. I mean, they have bones and blood and feet and hair and they sweat and they have eyes. So it's a very physical thing where you're sitting on this horse and it's walking and you're moving. You're rocking in the saddle as the horse moves. And I think it does something to the human nervous system. And I think that that's where the handicap riding programs come in. You know, I think it really does something.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then to move in partnership with the horse when the horse is doing maneuvers that you want, you know, that's another thing, too. So,
you mentioned the word partnership, and I just so believe so because it's been a long time since I've been on a horse, but just reflecting back that when I did ride horses, exactly that's what it is. It's, you know, as soon as you can get in sync with the horse,
mm-hmm.
in their movement, it just flows. And I also think that there's some kind of a connection to the earth that they have also.
Yes, it's like that groundedness. It's like they pull up energy. I used to meditate. I still meditate once in a while, but I used to have a really good practice. And I could feel that energy come up from the earth through the horse, through me, out the top of my head, you know. And I have had, really large, almost enlightenment experiences riding horses. So particularly showing them, you know, that's when I would get these really big experiences.
Let's talk about some of those experiences. Would you like to share with our listening audience an experience that you had, you know, during that meditative riding state?
Yeah, well, it's funny because at this point in my life, I'm sort of down on showing horses because I just don't see, you know, I mean, how many ribbons can you get?
Right.
So, I mean, I have a lot.
And
I just don't see the value of it, you know. But when I was doing it, it was extremely valuable. And it was valuable sort of like a martial arts practice where your consciousness gets so honed that I used to feel like when I showed in the Junior Grand National up at the Cow Palace years ago, and I had this really hot horse, and I felt like I could control her with my thoughts. And she, I mean, I would think something and she would stop, you know. And maybe it was like very subtle physical things that I was doing, you know, to make her stop. But she would just follow my thoughts. So it was amazing. And I remember the first time I showed in the Peruvian Paso National Championship competition down at Griffith Park in L.A., I was so scared. So there we are. I mean, it was I was really nervous because there are all the big barns. I mean, these really fancy horses that you see in the magazines, and you know, all the big displays and all the music, and you know, the very famous trainers riding horses. I'm going, what am I doing? You know, and I went into the arena in my class, and it was like 24 people. It was huge, and I had a really good horse. I had a really, really good horse. And there was some point I was riding along the rail, and I could take you there actually right now.
Okay.
And point to this spot in the arena in Griffith Park. And I just went, whoa. And the kind of feeling of energy coming up my back, you know, and the ecstasy and the joy and the feeling of just merging with everybody in the arena and everybody past that, you know, hit me. And we went around the arena like that for like most of the show. It was just incredible, an incredible experience. And the judge, I mean, here I am. This is my first time in this level of competition. And the judge just pulled me into the middle, which is like, that's the good pile, you know. So
yep.
There I was sitting in the good pile. And then he excused everybody else. And I just went, oof, you know, I lost it. I lost this collectedness or this energy or whatever I have. I was so tired. That was the point. I was just so physically exhausted that I couldn't handle it. So we went back on the rail, and I got a fifth or something like that, you know. But he talked to me afterwards. It was so funny. I was just so amazed. He said, Sandy, what happened to you in there? He said, I had you tied for third.
Oh, wow.
And he said, you just fell out of it, you know. And that's exactly what happened. And I told him what I just told you. And it was amazing, you know, to ride in that kind of a state, because it was like all hooked up, you know, spiritually, physically, mentally, the horse. I mean, the horse is part of this, too. So.
Right. It was you were one. With
yeah.
The horse.
Yeah.
Oh, that goosebumps.
Yeah, it's happened to me a couple times,
uh-huh.
You know. It's really neat, but it's really unnerving, too,
yeah.
You know. But I could still point to that spot, you know, and I know I could feel it leaving me, too, when it left. So anyway, so that's what's possible with horses.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Teiko.
Okay.
He is one special guy.
Oh, he is. He's wonderful.
So let's go back to at the time that he was prematurely born.
Uh-huh.
And what happened?
Well, what happened is exactly what I wrote about in the book. You know, my daughter, I love gospel music. And so my daughter and I were going to a gospel concert, and we already had gospel music going on in the car. And I said, you know, we really should call Dad and see that everything's okay, you know, before we go. And so we did, and he says, no, it's not okay. You know, get back here right away. That Rosie, one of our dearest horses, had her baby prematurely, and, you know, it couldn't get up, and, you know, and Barry was just beside himself. So we ran back, you know, and just the whole vividness of standing in that field with my husband and my daughter, and you know, the wind was whipping. It was like California is not cold in the wintertime, but this particular night it was going to be down to 30, which is freezing.
Oh, yeah.
And so here's this baby on the ground. He's just this beautiful buff-colored buckskin. I mean, just this beautiful baby, and he's trying to lift his head, and he can barely lift his head, and his mom went crazy, and she was chasing us around, and I mean, it was a nightmare. It was really a nightmare, And but there's something about those times that, you know, they sort of say right about me, you know. So so he's now 10. He's now 10 years old.
Oh, wow.
He's a big, happy, strapping guy, and he's the horse that I ride now. And he's my boy. I love him.
So what happened that he was born prematurely?
Oh, well, his mom was old,
You
know, and she looked good when we bred her. It takes 11 months to, baby horses are in utero 11 months. So she looked fine when we bred her, but it really was too much for her. You know, I mean, if I was going to do anything in this story differently, I wouldn't have bred Rosie. But that's the way it was, we did. And so as the baby got heavier and all the hormones hit her legs and her body, you know, she just got to be in a lot of pain. And so I think that, I mean, the vet said that the prematurity was nature's way of saying this baby has a better chance of living outside the mom than inside the mom. So
so as a premature colt then, obviously you had some extra work to do with this baby.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it seems to me that the mother had died, too.
She dies when he's 5 months old.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so up to that point, was she still able to, she was nursing him and able to do everything?
Yeah, she,
does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was on the job, definitely. I mean, she had her maternal instincts from the first instant he was born were, like, on. And so she was really on the job. And that actually, like, oh, he was so sick. I mean, I didn't take any pictures of him then because it was so bad. You know, I didn't want to record it, and I just didn't want to see it. And I talk in the book at one point about the neighbors all coming by and standing on the fence outside our ranch and, you know, praying for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and just, you know, sort of moment of silence type stuff because he looked so bad. But he came through it, you know. He came, the vet told us if he lasted for 5 days, he would survive. And he did. And not only did he survive, he triumphed. He became this really great riding horse with a super attitude. Really likes people.
Wow.
Yeah, so he did it.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with author Sandy Nathan. Her book, Keiko, the Little Horse That Could, is the basis of this interview. But, hey, as you've heard so far, there's so much more about horses that non-horse people like me could even imagine. Besides, Sandy is a fun person to listen to, isn't she? And, oh, by the way, her website address is sandynathan.com. So when Keiko's mother died, did you become the surrogate yourself?
Well, he was pretty much on his own by that point.
By that point, okay.
Yeah, At 5 months, I mean, nature really knows what it's doing. You know, if, horses usually are not premature, and that they never induce a horse into labor. You know, I mean, we've had horses like a month late, and we're like, oh, my God, you know. But they never induce labor because they don't know. One, they may not know exactly when the pregnancy began.
Okay.
And two, they need all that time. They're still developing. So they never induce them. So, so this is the first and only premature baby that we've had in breeding horses 20 years was Keiko. So it was a real shock.
So how different was Keiko, considering that, you know, his start in life was different than the other horses that you have on your ranch? How different was he from your other horses?
Well, one of the things, we've had two horses, Teiko and then another mare, filly at that time, who had veterinary problems when they were young. And so they're handled a lot. The vets are absolutely fabulous. I mean, horse vets are so wonderful. And so they're handled a lot, and they're touched a lot, and they're, you know, messed with a lot. And both of these horses are so friendly. They absolutely love people.
Yeah.
And so that was what was different about Teiko from some of the other ones, you know. Some of the horse trainers would say you're supposed to, you know, imprint. You're supposed to imprint yourself on the baby, on all the babies, when they're born, which is just going out and handling them and using the clippers near them and, you know, brushing them and picking up their feet and doing all of that, you know, which is, I mean, I think it's probably a really good idea. But a lot of times, I mean, mares, when they've had their baby, their hormones are so raging that, you know, I mean, I wouldn't walk up to too many mares and start, you know, handling their baby. It's a job that takes a few people where somebody has to catch the mare, somebody has to catch the baby, you have to handle them all over. So a lot of ours, you know, don't get that kind of early handling. And it makes them more cautious about people, and I think it lasts their whole lives.
So with this connection to Teiko at the beginning, the handling and that you did, was it easier to train him also to be a riding horse or, you know, whatever other purposes he has?
Yeah, he's just he was a snap all the way through. You know, he just has this great attitude, and he just went under saddle so easily.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. I have to tell you this. This is a funny story.
Okay.
I'm here I am. I have all this experience with horses. I'm 65 years old. Okay, so I'll tell you that. So I'm an older rider. I'm a disabled rider. I have a bad back. I have an artificial knee. My ankle is fused. I've had cancer, you know, so I have a bunch of things about me that make me think about getting on a horse.
Sure.
But anyway, so when Teiko was being trained, my husband kept telling me, he's perfect for you, he's perfect for you. And our trainer kept saying the same thing. And so finally I'm standing down there at the barn. And so Tony, you know, yells to me, "This is Sandy, you know, look." And so he climbs up on Teiko. He drops the reins. So the horse is just standing there. He climbs up on Teiko, and he's standing in the saddle, and he has his arms over his head, and he's waving his arms. And he was saying, which is, I mean, people who ride are going to go, "What?" You know, because I would never do that with any other horse. But Teiko just takes everything in stride. So now I ride him. It convinced me.
Good. So you've been around horses for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And yourself, reflecting back, what were some of those huge lessons that these horses have taught you?
I say a little bit about this at the end of the book, but when I was a kid, I was raised in San Francisco. I was on a hill. I mean, you didn't dare bicycle down that hill, I mean, because you'd kill yourself. And my mom, you know, moms at that time didn't send kids to nursery school or anything like that,
right.
So I had no contact with other kids. And I ended up so shy that I could hardly talk. I mean, you'd never guess it now, but that's how it was. And, I mean, I was so shy that just functioning in school was really, really hard. And at the same time, I always wanted a horse. I was just totally horse crazy. So we moved down to the peninsula, San Francisco Peninsula, when I was 8. And I kept begging my parents for a horse and begging them for a horse. And finally, when I was 10, I got to take riding lessons. And then when I was 13, they got me a horse. And it was like the most exciting thing that I could ever imagine. And he was a great horse. He was just a real plain horse and really perfect for a beginner, you know. So I had him. Within 2 weeks, he would not leave the barn. Because this shy little me that I was all everywhere else was also on him. And he figured me out right away. He said he didn't have to do anything, so he didn't do anything. And I complained to the guy who ran the barn, and he says, "What? You know, there's nothing wrong with that horse." And he got on him, and the horse is going all over the place and, you know, just being perfect. And I went, "Whoa." And it was a huge learning, even as a kid. You know, it's like, I am in charge. I can make I'm the one who gets this horse out or not. You know, it's like, I'm the boss. So I learned a huge, you know, a lot of stuff like that. Basically, horses saved me. You know, a kid like me back in the 50s, you know, there wasn't, they don't put kids in therapy, but if it was my kid, I'd have me in therapy like right away. But what I learned, what I got my therapy was from the horse, you know, and I rode all over the place, you know, and it just changed my whole life. It changed how I related to kids at school, or changed my friends, it changed everything. So that's a really huge learning I've gotten, you know, and the other thing I've learned is, when I was a teenager, I had a really wonderful horse trainer teacher, and he was also a cattleman, and he had sort of a presence to him that was unbelievable, you know. I mean, I really admired this guy a lot. I'd seen him ride. He was a fabulous rider. I'd seen him ride him a lot, obviously, but he was a fabulous rider. So my college roommate met him once, and her father was a professor. And she said, well, why do you like an uneducated man so much? I mean, why do you admire him so much? And it was this quality that I had that he got from handling rough horses. And it's just like poise and centeredness and courage and competence, you know, to handle a 1,200-pound stallion that wants to maul you, that's something. you know, and so he had all of that. And the people that I saw in college that were so educated and had such vocabularies and all of that didn't have it, you know. And to me, Glenn had something that the professors didn't. Mm-hmm. And so that's been something that's led me my whole life.
Wow. So as I'm listening to you, I'm also sort of reflecting that I know more about dogs than I do horses.
Mm-hmm.
And with dogs, as a dog owner, we as the owner have to be the alpha. We have to be the leader of the pack.
Yes.
And so what I'm also kind of hearing is that you have to give that horse they have to know that you are the leader of the pack.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's how, you know, if they don't know that, then you don't leave the barn.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, that's how this horse was. He knew that I wasn't in control.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have to be the alpha. We have dogs, too, so it's the same kind of a thing. There's three of them, and they have a pack order, and,
uh-huh,
you know, and I'm the boss. And so that's how you get when you see these trainers. You know, it's like they're the boss. They don't have to tell the horse they're the boss. They walk in, and they're the boss.
It's their demeanor.
Yeah, it's an aura, and it's a posture, a physical way of moving.
And so from that, then, I'm just kind of thinking back as to probably why people do get bucked off horses at times. I remember our daughter was on a trail ride one time, and the horse ran right into a tree, ran her into the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And he just slipped right by and knocked her off and, you know, broke an arm and this thing. And so I think that probably at that point, she wasn't the alpha. She was just a rider.
Yeah. They're very unpredictable, you know.
Well,
this is why I have all these fears and thoughts now about getting on a horse with all my injuries. But,
mm-hmm,
you know, I mean, I've seen Keiko, as calm as he is, I've seen him really upset. And they do this stuff, like running away and bucking and, you know, rearing. And, you know, they do that kind of stuff. And it's really hard to call sometimes, you know. I mean, you may know if a horse has a pattern of that. You know, like, was your daughter running the horse when that happened?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe the guy who was running her could have told her that he did that. If he did, you know, if he knew. Because sometimes they'll do it just once, and you don't know that they're going to do that. But, yeah, it's a dangerous business. It's a really dangerous business.
Wow. I'm getting to know so much more about horses. And you've lived on a ranch for your life also, all your life pretty much?
No. Actually, when I was a kid, we moved to this place 15 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And before that, we were in Woodside, which is in Northern California,
uh-huh,
on the peninsula, and we were there for 6 years.
Uh-huh.
And so before that, I boarded the horse.
Oh, okay.
So I boarded the horse. And it's like one, you learn going from taking riding lessons. I mean, I took riding lessons for 3 years. I learned more in 2 weeks of having my own horse than I had in 3 years of riding lessons. It's just that intense, you know. And then going from having a horse boarded where somebody else is taking care of it and watches it, you know, to having it on your own property is another whole, it's like high school, college, graduate school. You know, it's another whole thing because they can get sick, they can get hurt, they have accidents themselves. I mean, stuff happens really fast. So that's part of what I love about ranch life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also part of what really makes me glad that we stopped breeding horses. We stopped breeding about my husband and I are at retirement age. So we stopped breeding about 6 years ago, I think. So the stallion that resulted from that breeding is now 5, and he's the best horse we ever produced. So it's nice, you know, to go out with a bang. I mean, he's just spectacular. But
Sandy, you mentioned boarding, and as you mentioned earlier, you know, I know very little about horses, so I'm finding this very interesting, and I have this sort of question mark in my mind about boarding a horse out. I'm just not quite understanding how, you know, for me to own a horse and board it out and maybe visit it once a week or once a month or something, I'm just not getting this concept. And so I imagine that even, you know, with boarding a horse, you never really get close to that horse. It's just sort of a thing that you have a horse.
Board them out and they'll ride them 5 days a week or more. You know, they just go out. So what you do is commute a lot to your horse.
Right. Okay.
And that's what I did. I rode from the time I was 13 and I got my horse to when I went away to college. I rode pretty much every day, including Christmas.
Wow.
And I really have to hand it to my mom for driving me out there because it was a fairly long drive, and she drove me every single day.
Wow.
Out there until I got my driver's license, which I'm sure my parents had a huge party when that happened because then I could drive myself.
As a mom, you probably do know what it's like when that child finally gets the driver's license. And it's like, what? I don't have to drive anymore?
Yeah, it's like release.
Yeah,
it's strange. But anyway, so I rode really a lot, you know, and I think some people just, you know, come out once a week. If you're working, it's really hard. You know, I did all this early riding, you know, before I went off to college. And then I had a period of about 20 years where I was in school, I had my son, I was working, I was doing all this stuff, and I just didn't have time to ride. So, you know, it was kind of a funny thing. It's like when I could afford to have a horse, to board a horse, because I was working, I didn't have time to ride it. And then when I wasn't working and had time, then I couldn't afford it. So that was sort of how things went.
It's been a real pleasure, Sandy. I so enjoyed talking to you. Give our listeners your website address.
Oh, it's Sandy, S-A-N-D-Y, Nathan, N as in Nancy, A-T-H-A-N, .com. Just SandyNathan.com. There it is.
All right, SandyNathan.com. Sandy, thanks again. This has been a real pleasure. And listeners, as we mentioned before, the name of the book is TECOLOTE. And it's spelled T-E-C-O-L-O-T-E. Teco, the little horse that could. And you've heard a little bit about Teco. And the story is really sweet. And it's really written for children of all ages, from little toddlers to the 90s. So please check it out. It's a great book. The reviews have been extraordinary on it. And it's really sweet. And it really gives an indication of how a horse, with all its challenges, can make it. And, you know, is it really any different than us? We have challenges also, but there is hope, and we can make it. Thanks, Sandy.
Thank you.
And, listeners, this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.